Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. As I continue to look for more ways to fulfill my pledge to provide the information you need to make informed choices about your health and wellness, I've developed a simple way for you to access curated supplement protocols previously available only to patients in my private practice. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com. There you'll find easy-to-follow links to not only the best individual products, but also to my brand new Intelligent Medicine Lifestyle Supplement Protocols that combine the products I recommend to achieve your specific goals, whether it be heart health, immune support, and much more. It's the easiest way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need in order to follow the Intelligent Medicine Lifestyle. And for a limited time, you'll also receive 10% off and free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details and to take advantage of these special offers, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We got lots to talk about this weekend, so stay with us. Give us an hour or two, and we'll give you some of the most important health information that has crossed the wires these past couple of days. Also, we'll be taking your phone calls. 877-726-8255 is our number. We got all kinds of stories to share with you. A little later, we're going to do a deep dive on the flu. Yes, the flu is ravaging all 50 states across the United States. It's a bad year for the flu. It's even worse because of the lack of efficacy of the flu vaccine. I weighed in on that subject this week in our newsletter. I'll share some of the major points with you during today's broadcast. And also, we'll talk about yet another epic fail, which is our number one drug used to combat the flu, which is called Tamiflu. There's some disturbing facts about Tamiflu that I'll impart to you in just a few moments. But first, you can call us 877-726-8255. And among the big stories this week, did you see the story that came across the news wires? It was widely publicized. And the headline was, "Your DNA won't determine the best diet to help you lose weight." And actually, there are three major points to this story, which was published Tuesday in the Journal of the American Medical Association. That's the premier medical journal in the United States. And one of the contentions was that if you do those handy-dandy genetic tests, you know, those tests that purport to tell you which diet type you are. I mean, look, it's obvious that one man's meat is another man's poison. Some people do well on a low-carb diet. Some people do well on a low-fat diet. How is it that Dr. Atkins and Dean Ornish, at opposite ends of the diet spectrum, Atkins embracing a high-meat, high-fat diet that's very low in carbs, and Dean Ornish doing virtually the opposite, telling people to have lots and lots of whole grains, but virtually no fat. How is it that both claim tremendous success in getting people to lose weight? And, you know, the diet wars have raged for decades now between vegans and paleo dieters and ketogenic dieters. There's no end to the controversy about which diet works best. So the folks who do these genetic tests, they say, well, okay, we have a way of predicting whether you're going to respond to either a low-fat diet or a low-carb diet. They're gene testing labs, and you can do these online or you can do these through a health practitioner. One lab, for example, offers customers the chance to, quote, lose up to 3 times more weight on your DNA diet using a genomic matching service that, based on a cheek swab or a saliva sample, gives you all kinds of information about, you know, are you someone who is genetically susceptible to excess carbs? Or are you someone who it has kind of a predilection to gaining weight if you ate a lot of fat. And we know that may be the case. There may be a real basis for believing this because, let's say your ancestors grew up in, maybe they were Eskimos. You're of Eskimo descent. And, centuries and millennia, your ancestors, subsisted on whale blubber and very little in the way of carbohydrates. There was no, there were no bagels, in, Canada and Alaska. And northern Siberia, and so we suspect that people of Inuit background might have a genetic susceptibility to gain weight if they have a lot of carbs. Or conversely, you know, maybe your ancestors are from the Middle East, where wheat cultivation began 10,000 or 15,000 years ago. Your ancestors were used to eating grains, or perhaps they come from equatorial Africa, where people subsist on starchy roots like cassava and yams, and had very little in the way of animal protein or meat. And maybe, just maybe, you're the kind of folks who will benefit from a vegan diet if your ancestors come from that part of the world. Well, anyway, they tested this proposition out, and the headline is, "Your DNA won't determine the best diet to help you lose weight." It made absolutely no difference. Here were the results. They took a bunch of volunteers. They genetically tested them. They assigned them to diet groups. And after 12 months of dieting, they found that the groups virtually lost the same amount of weight. I think it was about 11 pounds for the folks assigned to the low-fat diet, and 13 pounds for those assigned to the low-carb diet. So statistically, that didn't make that much of a difference. It was a slight edge, you might say, to the low-carb diet. But basically, they say it wasn't a big enough difference to achieve statistical significance. Now, so another point in this study, you know, I read the stories, and then I did something that very, very few health journalists do. I actually looked at the study, and that, you know, your eyes can glaze over when you look at these studies because they're, you know, they're 67 pages long. And what you want to do when you look at these studies is you want to look at what's called material and methods. Material and methods is maybe on, you know, page 35 of the study, and it details precisely what they're talking about when they put people on a low carb or a low fat diet. And so I looked at that section, and I was very surprised to see that the low-carb diet was actually very liberal in its allowance for carbohydrates. It's far more liberal than the low-carb diets that we put some of our patients on in my practice when we want them to lose weight. Perhaps they've got hypertension or diabetes. We put them on a very low-carb diet, severely carb-restricting them, and we get very dramatic results if they adhere to the diet. But in these so-called low-carb diets, the allowance was for 150 grams of carbohydrates. Now, you may say, well, I don't know, grams? Hey, I'm not a European. We use ounces and pounds here. But what does it actually translate to in terms of a food allowance for carbohydrates? Well, I broke it down. If you're put on a 150-gram so-called low-carb diet, that allows you to have one medium baked potato per day, a generous portion of oatmeal, a couple of slices of whole wheat bread, and maybe a little bit of fruit, an apple, and a serving of strawberries. Now, for a lot of people, that would be a vast improvement over their diets, which are laden with sugar and soda and all that stuff. But in this study, both groups lost weight. And another take-home that the media reports and Journal of the American Medical Association reports is that, you know, if you want to lose weight, just eliminate the junk. And that's what both groups did. They didn't have a lot of junk food, a lot of processed food. They eliminated sugar and soda. And so both groups lost weight. And, but they said that it didn't matter whether they were on a low-fat diet or a low-carb diet. But the problem is the study is very flawed because the low-carb diet that they used, well, maybe they said, look, It's so hard to stick to a low-carb diet. Let's make it realistic for these poor patients. They're going to stick to it for a year. You know, we won't want to torture them. We'll just give them a 150-gram carbohydrate allowance. Well, that is insufficiently powered to show the true benefits of a real low-carb diet. You know, Dr. Atkins would be aghast at this definition of a low-carb diet, and many of the proponents of ketogenic diets and paleo diets might say that's far too much in the way of a carbohydrate allowance. So the fact that you really didn't fairly compare low-carb to low-fat also renders the conclusion that the genetic testing didn't afford much benefit in terms of pre-selecting who would respond to which diet. But I got to say, I personally, I do not find these genetic tests ready for prime time. We've used them for a while at the Hoffman Center. Did that, you know, little experiment over a period of 6 months or so, maybe back in 2014 or 2015. We found those tests lacking in precision at predicting who would respond to what. It's very complicated. There are many genes involved. And we're in the process of studying, validating, and applying the vast amount of information we can get from a genetic analysis to the problem of who should eat what. There's actually a science to it. It's called nutrigenomics. And we've been talking about it for 10, 15 years. But it hasn't yet achieved its promise in terms of providing us with precision predictions about who should eat what. So if you're going to take one of those tests, you think it's going to tell you which diet to follow, you pay your money and you take your chances. As they say, results may vary. And hey, you get on a clean diet anyway, eliminate a lot of foods, you're going to lose weight. But is that exactly the right diet for you based on your genetic information? Unfortunately, this study in JAMA is not the last word on that. And that's my take. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, 877-726-8255. That's a lot of numbers, so let's make it simple. 877-726-TALK is our number for this weekend edition of Intelligent Medicine. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman for Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA, and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. They source only the highest quality, deep, cold water fish using traditional, sustainable methods. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and 28 of their fish oils have received the highest 5-star rating from the International Fish Oil Standards Program. Carlson is the number one selling liquid fish oil brand in the United States. Carlson's award-winning omega-3 nutritional supplements are available in soft gels and liquid form for those who have trouble swallowing supplements or who prefer this delivery method. For more information, go to CarlsonLabs.com. CarlsonLabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman here. There are several ways you can get in touch with us. You can call us directly now and be on the air live with me. You can dial 877-726-8255 this hour or next. That's 877-726-TALK. Also, you can email your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com, and we'll do a deep dive on your questions on our weekly podcast that's called Q&A with Layla. That's one of our most popular weekday podcasts. You can download this podcast via drhoffman.com or subscribe to them via iTunes or Stitcher. And another way you can get questions to us, and we've gotten quite a few this week, is by going to our website, drhoffman.com, and on your PC or Mac on the right side, there's a little box that if you click on, it'll enable you to record a question, as did Charlene. So let's hear from Charlene.
My name is Charlene. You mentioned that caffeine and coffee can do good things or not be as damaging, but I was told that it contributes to fibrocystic breast disease, and I had that, and I eliminated caffeine, and it went away. I want to know how it would affect that. So thank you.
Okay. Well, you know, these days coffee is in the news, and, you know, it's like one of those, man bites dog stories that the journalists like so much. You know, dog bites man, yeah, that happens every day, but man bites dog, hey, let's flip the script, and it gets pretty exciting. So all these years we've been talking about, I got to cut down on my caffeine. Caffeine is bad for you. It's bad for your heart. It's bad for your blood pressure. It makes you nervous, gives you insomnia. Et cetera, et cetera. Now we're coming up with all these benefits to coffee. It's heart protective. It's brain protective. There's all kinds of purported benefits to caffeine. And yet, there's a persistent, story that women coffee drinkers and caffeine drinkers, in general, you know, whether it be coffee or tea or, you know, and there's some caffeine in chocolate. That because of the methylxanthines in caffeine and other related substances, that these promote fibrocystic breast disease. And so in preparation of answering your call, I did a little research on that. And the exact mechanism is unknown why that should be the case. So, and when I looked it up, it was very confusing because there are a bunch of studies that said, yes, indeed, there is a correlation between coffee consumption and fibrocystic breast. A fibrocystic breast means, so, you know, hardening of the breast tissue, lumpy breast tissue. And, you know, in and of itself, it's not so much a problem because most studies suggest that that's not really linked to the risk of breast cancer. You know, in spite of the fact that it might be alarming, it might send women to get more mammograms, even biopsies unnecessarily. Fibrocystic breasts are not a problem per se, unless they become painful. Yeah, okay, I get it. You know, if you can't lie on your chest, you have to lie on your back. It's, you know, that's a problem. But many studies suggest that, yes, indeed, there's a correlation. And then other studies suggest that no correlation. There's one randomized controlled trial, 158 women with benign breast disease. They said that there was no relationship. Another one, women with benign breast disease did not have significantly different coffee and tea consumption patterns. So among the things that help, well, vitamin E has been proposed. That's not conclusive. Primrose oil, GLA. But the thing that helps the most, regardless of whether you cut your caffeine consumption or chocolate consumption, is iodine. The supplement iodine seems to have a very, very positive effect on painful, lumpy breasts. So maybe that's an approach you can take. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. February is Heart Health Month, a great reminder that tending to your cardiovascular health requires much more than simply lowering your cholesterol. Maintaining heart health requires a combination of diet and lifestyle choices, along with a smart regimen of supplementation. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Heart Health Protocol, my personal supplement recommendations to reduce your heart risk. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com. In addition to the Heart Health Protocol, you'll find easy-to-follow links for my supplement starter kit, immune protocol, and much more. As always, I strive to provide you with the tools you need to make informed choices beyond the cookie-cutter care of today's healthcare system, and these new protocols are an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle, the same supplements I take myself and prescribe for my patients. And for a limited time, you'll get 10% off and free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to DearHoffmanStore.com. That's DearHoffmanStore.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Huffman here. If you care to call us, 877-726-8255 this hour or next. And this week in our newsletter article, and by the way, you can get our newsletter by signing up at drhoffman.com. You get a newsletter each week in your inbox. And if I might say so myself, it's popular, it's informative. We discuss a wide range of subjects. And this week we tackled a subject that's on a lot of people's minds. Should I take the flu shot this year, especially in view of the poor track record of the flu shot in terms of protecting against the flu? And I'm going to say up front, you know, I'm not going to make the decision for you. You just need the facts, and you can make a decision for yourself and your family that makes sense. But in the past, you know, I get a lot of questions about this. In the past, my question about people question about whether they should take the flu shot is I'm agnostic. And what that means is that, you know, I see that maybe some benefits, though slight, and there's some downsides that are real. And so it's six of one and half a dozen of the other. You pay some money, you take some chances, and there may be an unclear benefit. But it is a real third rail issue in medicine. And questioning vaccines has been equated with Holocaust denial. After posting some of the information that I shared with you in the flu shot article that you can find now at drhoffman.com, it's been posted there. One nurse commented, this is on Facebook when I posted some of that information, quote, healthy children in my city are dying and you're spreading dangerous misinformation. So if I don't lockstep with health authorities and the Centers for Disease Control, powers that be, I'm accused of some form of heresy, much like, Galileo or Copernicus were accused of wrong thinking when they went against the teachings of the church in, you know, time of the scientific revolution. So this debate is so fraught with peril that the word is now in from the Centers for Disease Control. The flu vaccine is only about 25% effective against the predominant H3N2 strain, which is actually the most dangerous, the one that's causing the fatalities this year. It does slightly better against influenza B, 42%. But that's less common and less dangerous. And influenza A, it's more effective, 67% effective. It is said to protect against flu death, but the fact remains that 26% of fatalities occurred in vaccinated children. Now you might say, well, there was 74% effective in terms of preventing fatalities, but that's not a perfect track record. And there's also weak evidence for milder disease in flu shot recipients who are children or adults 18 to 49. So they maybe, you know, instead of suffering 6 days of symptoms, you might suffer five. But there was no symptom reduction seen in 50-plus individuals. And those are the folks who we're particularly concerned about, because they're the ones who are frail, at risk for a heart attack. Actually, recently there was a study saying that the flu increases your risk for a heart attack subsequently. And anyone who's experienced the flu, you know, you get a high temperature, your heart's pounding, and it puts a strain on your cardiovascular system. But for those older individuals, plus 50, there was no symptom reduction. Now, that's disturbing. So for perspective, I turn to the Cochrane Collaborative, which is a global independent network of researchers who gather and summarize the best evidence from research to help consumers make informed choices about treatment. Okay, and they're very well respected academics, scientists, caregivers, researchers. And they did a review in 2016, which was a year where the vaccine was even more effective than it is in 2018. So they haven't updated it since. And they are not particularly excited about the potential for the vaccine to protect us. They say the flu vaccines probably have a small protective effect against flu, but here's a very, very dramatic statistic. 71 people would need to be vaccinated to avoid one case of the flu. So in other words, 70 people would undergo the vaccination unnecessarily to protect one person. 29 would need to be vaccinated to avoid one case of influenza-like illness. And vaccines may have little or no appreciable effect on hospitalizations or number of working days lost. Also, particularly concerning was that vaccines, which are now recommended to all pregnant women, provided no protection against influenza-like illness. And the administration of the seasonal vaccine during pregnancy showed no significant effect on abortion or neonatal death, which is reassuring because some other studies have shown that the vaccine itself might increase the risk of miscarriage. But it didn't protect against miscarriage. And a lot of women are told, you know, it's big trouble if you get the flu, if you're pregnant, and it might affect the offspring. That's said to be a higher risk of schizophrenia in the offspring of women who get the flu. So women obey their doctor's blanket recommendation to get the flu shot. This is particularly a group where they want folks to get the flu shot, but not a lot of protection conferred by the flu shot. So, and another concern is, and this is a real phenomenon, is that a recent study, and admittedly it's a preliminary study, it's a small study, it's a study that looked at the spread of the flu virus that showed that you didn't have to cough or sneeze to spread it, you could just breathe. And as part of the study, they looked at who spread the virus most effectively. In other words, who breathed out more virus particles if they got the flu, whether vaccinated people or unvaccinated people. And amazingly, they found that vaccinated people, when they got the flu, shed 6.3 times more flu virus just by breathing. And, you know, so there's been a lot of pushback against it. You know, it's like, no, you can't conclude that the vaccine spreads the flu, as some of the more lurid anti-vaccine websites have reported, but it is a finding that needs to be pursued. Another finding that's related is that if you get the flu shot every year, you get less protection than if you sporadically get the flu shot. So the very same people that were counseled every year, you know, get your flu shot, go to Duane Reade, go to CVS, get your flu, it's available everywhere. You don't even have to go to a doctor. You can bypass health practitioners completely. If you do it every year, you get actually less protection than if you did it maybe, I don't feel like doing it this year. I did it back in, 2006. Maybe I'll get it this year. Well, you got more protection than if you did it 2006, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, etc. So, all in all, not a ringing endorsement of the flu vaccine. And, the problem is we focus that like a one-note Charlie on the vaccine as our measure of protection. Well, yeah, obviously, wash your hands, get adequate sleep, etc. Stay home if you got the flu. But we should be looking at other factors. And there's plenty of studies that suggest that something as simple as taking adequate levels of vitamin D confers even more protection against the flu than the vaccine. And we need studies to look at the people who've died of the flu to see if perhaps they were extraordinarily vitamin D deficient. Maybe they didn't have enough zinc. Maybe they didn't have adequate supplies of glutathione in their bloodstream. Vitamin E, vitamin C, all these things are protective. Could it be that we're putting our eggs in the wrong basket in terms of a policy to protect our populace from the flu? Yes, the vaccine, it's more mainstream. It's more high-tech, certainly more profitable for the companies that are vaccine manufacturers. But are we missing the boat? And this year is a perfect illustration of that. In a few moments, I'll tell you a little bit about Tamiflu. We'll also talk about an immune support protocol that I think could be effectively deployed to help a lot of people minimize their chances of getting the flu and reduce their symptoms once they get the flu. That's important information that I'd like to share with you on today's broadcast. 877-726-8255 is our number. And let me share this related information with you. If you're suffering from frequent fatigue, the folks at Nutritional Therapeutics have a wonderful product for you. I've been using it for years. It's NT Factor. And NT Factor works on the mitochondria. Those are the energy-producing organelles within our cells. NT Factor has been shown in clinical trials to reduce fatigue by almost half. There's now a clinical trial underway to look at NT Factor's effect in fibromyalgia. And we'll bring you news of that when it's completed. NT Factor is available in ProPax. That's a multivitamin that has fish oil and probiotics. But you can get NT Factor alone in a product called Healthy Aging. It's the perfect accompaniment to whatever supplement regimen you're already taking. And it provides you the unique energy support of pure NT factor in a potent delivery system. There's a 45-day money-back guarantee now, and you have nothing to lose. So order ProPax or Healthy Aging. Here's the number, 800-982-9158. That's 800-982-9158. Or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. 877-726-8255 is our number, and we'll be right back with more Intelligent Medicine.
Ah, the pursuit of anti-aging. We diet, exercise, use the latest moisturizers, but did you know that dietary supplements can make a huge difference too? Our body's master antioxidant, glutathione, plays a significant role in the anti-aging process by helping to keep our strands of DNA healthy. At the end of our DNA strands are telomeres, little caps that protect our DNA and chromosomes. Over time, these caps can become frayed and cell aging accelerates. Anti-aging studies suggest that by boosting our body's glutathione levels, we can reduce telomere shortening and help protect our DNA. But since our glutathione levels decrease as we age, we need some help. RegActive is a revolutionary and remarkable supplement that is transforming the future of anti-aging health and wellness. RegActive features ME3, which has over 20 years of research and is proven to naturally stimulate and produce glutathione in our body, helping to support our cellular and anti-aging health. RegActive is available on Amazon.com. That's REG-ACTIV.
Stop breathing right now. No, really, hold your breath. This is how it feels when you're stuffed up due to colds, flu, pollen, dander, post-nasal drip, or any other reason. That's when you need clear saline nasal spray, the only spray with the power of xylitol. That simple saline solution you're using is only doing half the job. It's just rinsing. In multiple research studies, xylitol has been shown to reduce bacterial adhesion and help keep your nose moist and clean much longer than saline alone, making Clear more effective at washing away that nasty gunk in your nose. Clear is so powerful, it's been granted over 11 patents. So step up from that wimpy saline spray to something that actually works faster and better at getting you the relief you need to start breathing now. And if your doctor isn't talking to you about Clear for your congestion, maybe you need to get a new doctor. You don't just rinse your hands, why would you just rinse your nose? Clear saline nasal spray with xylitol. Available at Walmart, CVS, Whole Foods, Rite Aid, and everywhere else. Or clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Now go wash your nose.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman here. You can call us 877-726-8255. In a few moments, we're going to talk about the number one drug used to treat the flu. It's an epic fail. But first, let's talk to Jimmy from New York. Hi, Jimmy.
Yes, doctor. I had two quick questions. I don't know if you can answer both. One is lowering my blood sugar and hemoglobin A1C and my blood pressure. Mm-hmm. Blood sugar, for years I've been taking chromium picolinate 200 micrograms twice mm-hmm. a day with meals, and mm-hmm. I take cinnamon along
that's
with meals too. Blood pressure
start.
usually runs around 95 to 103, but now it's up to 123, and my A1C was 5.9 to 0.6, but now it's 6.5. So mm-hmm, I do mm-hmm. eat a good diet. I'm low mm-hmm. carbs. Mm-hmm. I do exercise, but somehow it's
yeah.
not going down.
Well, there is a little bit of a tendency as you age to have less tight blood sugar control, and certainly there's a tendency for blood pressure to go up. You know, it's not a coincidence that as we get older, we get a little stiffer. You know, maybe you can't
okay.
Get into those, you know, lotus position yoga postures that you did when you were 35. And similarly, the arteries become stiffer. And that's also a reason why, you know, try as we might, most of us can't avoid using reading glasses by the time we're, you know, 45 or 50. There is some just stiffening of the tissue, and stiffening in the arterial walls translates to high blood pressure. And sometimes there's some inevitability to that, you know, with the best possible diet, the best possible exercise. It's kind of beyond the scope of this call for me to drill down and critique every element of your lifestyle. You know, maybe there's some things that drive your hemoglobin A1C up, you know, that you could be a little more carb restrictive, that you could even go on it's called a ketogenic diet, which is virtually no carbs. That diet is difficult to follow long term, but sometimes that can achieve remarkable improvements in blood sugar. So, you know, without going into precisely what you're having for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, yes, stick to a low-carb diet. Yes, take chromium. What you can also do for blood sugar is one of my favorite products. It's called CM Core. CM Core contains berberine, and berberine is, according to some studies, as effective as metformin, which is one of the popular first-line drugs for borderline blood sugar, you know, for type 2 diabetes when you start going into the sixes. Other things that can be helpful for blood pressure, certainly you should try Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract. They're one of our sponsors. But I really am impressed with studies that show that you can get blood pressure reduction if you take, and the dose, I think appropriate dose is about 2,400 of the aged garlic extract. It usually comes, formula that I like has 600 milligrams of aged garlic extract per capsule. You take 4 capsules per day. In addition, there's some reduction in plaque formation that can occur. I'm impressed these days with the vitamin K2, or more precisely, it's called MK7. I attended a lecture yesterday at a conference here in New York from a researcher in Holland, where they're doing a lot of vitamin K research. It seems that, you know, countries where there's aged cheese have less in the way of cardiovascular disease, and that's like a high-fat food. But the aged cheese is rich in vitamin K2, and vitamin K2 tends to reduce calcific plaque that's in the arteries. So the dosage of that I recommend is 180 micrograms, MCGs, per day. You know, the plaque that forms there, that stiffens the arteries, and that can raise blood pressure. I recently wrote an article about hypertension. I listed about, you know, some people say, where do I start? 25 different things that you can take that have potential to lower blood pressure. You can start, you know, check that article. It was about a couple of months ago. Look at some of the things there that you might be taking to lower blood pressure. That, too, can help. Fish oil, of course, is among them. Vitamin D may be among them as well. So there you have, you know, kind of a starter program. Again, it's actually one of the most prevalent reasons for people to come to seek services from me and my nutritionist is that, you know, blood pressure is edging up, the hemoglobin A1C is edging up, the doctors want to put people on medication, people don't like the side effects of medication, what can they do via diet, via lifestyle, via exercise? You know, is there a question of something like sleep apnea, which can cause blood sugar to deteriorate and blood pressure to go up? You know, all these little factors enter into the equation of who gets high blood pressure. So does that help you at all?
Yes, it does. I am taking the Kyolic 109.
That's good.
For the blood pressure. And I thank you very much, and I'm going to make an appointment to come in to see you.
Well, that would be great. Yeah, Neil, maybe we could do some fine-tuning, because it sounds like you're on the right track with a lot of things, but, you know, often I find, yeah, maybe there's a couple more things we can address. I appreciate your call. All right, this item, before we go to break, and we'll carry it forward in hour two, Tamiflu claims another victim. It causes a child to twitch, hallucinate, and bang head. Another North Texas family speaking out about what they believe are side effects from a popular flu treatment. The drug was given to their 2-year-old son. He began twitching, hallucinating, and slamming his head in pain after taking Tamiflu this month. These reports are everywhere. These are among the known side effects of Tamiflu. In the next hour, we're going to take a critical look at Tamiflu. Is it effective? Is it worth risking these potential side effects? I think you'll be surprised at what we're going to share with you in hour two. So stay with us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, 877-726-8255 for questions.
Green means go. Active lifestyles call for extra nutritional support. For over 30 years, Kyo Green has been a trusted brand and the go-to choice for consumers concerned with getting enough greens in their diet. And now, Kyo Green's new and innovative powdered drink mixes are here. Try these exciting superfood combinations for balanced green nutrition, all fast-dissolving with a light, clean taste. Start your day with Greens Blend for sustained energy to keep you going, Harvest Blend for immune defense, or Sprouts Blend for digestive support. Add to your morning shaker bottle, juice, or smoothie for a delicious and nutritious way to begin each and every day. Kayo Greens blends feature ancient grains and seeds, barley and wheatgrass, superfoods, and fruits and vegetables for a great nutritional foundation for your health and whole body wellness. GMO-free, vegan, and gluten-free. Add Kayo Green to your day and get going.
Kayo Greens new drink mixes are available at fine health food stores everywhere.